Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to episode 69 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me for this 69th event is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
And our original Comic Book Nation Trinity member, Brandon Davis, is back on the couch, and he's all smiles today.
Episode 69, nice.
Yeah. 69 episodes. It feels like 69, plus another 100, but, you know, that's neither nor here nor there.
Wow.
Today, we are going to be talking about quite a lot of exciting things. There are some big shakeups in the Star Wars universe I think we probably should address. We are also going to be talking about what's going on in the Marvel TV universe. Some bad things happen there as well. And we will be diving deep into the latest chapter of Jonathan Hickman's X-Men Reinvention, Powers of X number 5, and reviewing the most anticipated new series of the season so far, of the TV season so far, Stumptown, starring Maria Hill herself, Cobie Smulders.
That's the most anticipated series of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably like one of the best newly reviewed shows that we've had, and a lot of places were calling it the best new show
of the season. I mean, it's good. We'll talk.
Including comicbook.com, so
I just didn't know there was that much hype for this show.
Yeah, I know. Well, if you read comicbook.com, we have all this stuff on there, but you gotta read comicbook.com.
Never heard of it.
Anyway, moving right along. First things first, I thought we'd jump into the Star Wars universe because we got a big piece of news last night, which is that Marvel's guru, the man who made the Marvel Cinematic Universe happen, Mr. Kevin Feige, is going to be making the move over to the Star Wars universe, which is really not that big of a move. It's all under Disney's house, but this was a big deal, and he's going to be overseeing a Star Wars movie, which I don't think anybody saw coming. Anybody here see that coming?
I thought everybody saw that coming.
I didn't. But mostly because, like, he's busy. Like, I don't know.
Like, I mean, like, on the internet for the past few years, everybody's been like, when's Kevin Feige going to do Star Wars? And even though he said no, people were still like, well, when's Kevin Feige going to do Star Wars?
Oh, yeah. I never thought it was like, I mean, the internet.
Yeah, that's the internet wants a lot of things.
The internet says a lot of things.
Patton Oswalt has said he wanted a lot of things. But, like, yeah, there's a difference between, like, the internet saying something and then something actually happening. And this is something that has now actually happened. It's been announced. And Kevin Feige is going to develop a Star Wars movie. We don't know what it is. We know we're getting a new era of Star Wars coming up after The Rise of Skywalker finishes out the sequel trilogy this fall. But then the door is kind of wide open. We know Rian Johnson's been working on a new trilogy. We know the Game of Thrones showrunners are working on a new trilogy. And that will be the first new thing that we visit after this Skywalker, Rise of Skywalker sequel trilogy kind of ends. So it'll be interesting to see that kind of where Kevin Feige ends up and what kind of role he begins to play at Lucasfilm. Because you got to imagine this isn't just, I mean, what we hear is that he's developing a Star Wars film, but you got to imagine, like, it doesn't end there, right? Like, at this point, you think Disney is looking at Kevin Feige as a much bigger type of executive and kind of shepherding some of these brands. And it seems just a little serendipitous that, you know, after Star Wars has had these kind of problems early on in its Disney launch, and you have, like, CEO Bob Iger kind of pulling back and saying, hey, you know, we made some mistakes early on, but we've learned, we're cleaning this all up, and, like, we're going to be doing things differently going forward. Like I said, it seems kind of serendipitous to have all of a sudden the announcement that, oh, we're putting Kevin Feige in this franchise, but he's just doing this one movie, right? It seems like this would probably grow into a bigger role within Lucasfilm / Disney for Feige to basically be the guy who can really string these properties together and make them into cinematic juggernauts. That's just my speculation, but it seems to fit with what we're seeing here. How about you guys?
I mean, I think it, yes, do I think that could happen? Sure, I'm not ready to, like, jump the light speed ahead and go like, yeah, he's overseeing Star Wars, and is he going to leave Marvel and like all this other stuff? I'm like, well, just pump the brakes. Like, we don't even know what developing a movie means as far as like how involved he is, what his role in that. It could be a lot of things. So I'm like, could that happen? Yes, absolutely it could. But do I see Marvel, you know, yes, I know they're all under the same umbrella, but, you know, Marvel still kind of has a vested interest in putting Marvel first before other things underneath the Disney umbrella. I don't necessarily see them going, yeah, sure, let's loan him out to Star Wars and let that become a priority.
I think at the very least, he becomes a producer on a lot of movies going forward. Like, I don't think it's a one-time thing. I mean, but not in like a heavily involved role. He'll probably just be like a consultant giving notes and giving ideas. I mean, he did that with the Amazing Spider-Man franchise back like, when Andrew Garfield was Spider-Man.
That makes
he knows the Star Wars stuff. He's a big fan. That's why I think he does Marvel so well, because he's a big fan. So I think that they're just going to pull from his brain a little bit, and that doesn't hurt anybody. Kathleen Kennedy, according to a top source at Disney, in the first report, is still in charge, and I don't think that's going to change. I don't think you dethrone Kathleen Kennedy for Kevin Feige, because he can't do both. He didn't have time for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
How can he oversee the two biggest franchises in the world?
But I do agree with you.
Although I think he had time for Spider-Man.
If you've got this resource, why not?
Yeah, use it.
Yeah, I totally get
this
that.
This one was also a passion project. He had an idea that he was very passionate about. He pitched to them, and they were like, yeah. This is a passion project. We always say these things, but we always talk about this creative space without the financial realities to go with it, which is if Kevin Feige produces a Star Wars movie that has a much bigger, better reception than most Star Wars movies that have come along before that, you know, then the dump trucks of money come out and then things change.
So, like, where do you gauge that? I'm just curious, because I'm in the camp of I really enjoyed The Force Awakens. I didn't enjoy anything else that came out except the last scene of Rogue One. So, but then there's other people who aren't like me who loved all of it, except for maybe Solo. That's the most common camp I see. And Richard is in the control room.
Richard in the booth saying,
it's all good.
All of
but so where do you gauge that? Does it have to, what level of success does Feige's movie have to have either critically or financially or both for you to say, well, maybe we should use it for everything?
The $1 billion is always now the mark. I think it's the $1 billion plus less divisive splits between fans. A Star Wars movie that can, there is no, I don't believe in a Star Wars movie that will unify everybody, but I do think you can score one that will bring fans together in opinion more so than what we got necessarily with a sequel trilogy or in Disney's first phase of rollouts with Rogue One, Solo, and the sequel trilogy. So, I mean, I think that's highly possible in making things that are kind of universally crowd-pleasing is Kevin Feige's specialty. So I think that's the success that you would need to see happen there before the dump trucks of money inevitably come out. But, all right, sounds
maybe he'll
like,
get another one up to $2 billion.
I mean, that's a good thing, but that has to be one hell of a Star Wars event film.
You know? No, I know. I agree.
So we'll leave it there because this is still taking shape until we know more about like what Kevin Feige's planning and what Star Wars films are coming down the pike. We'll have more to say on that. I don't think we have to worry about him leaving the MCU anytime soon. I think Matt is right about that. Let's not jump the gun. In other Star Wars news while we're still here, it's funny that Kevin Feige is coming in as the beef has been unleashed.
This was spicy.
Yeah, there's beef in the Star Wars universe between the old and the new masters. So George Lucas and Bob Iger kind of had a little war of words earlier this week or over the weekend. I forget where we are right now. So don't ask me about time or space. But they had a war of words where George Lucas basically came out, crapped on The Force Awakens, and Bob Iger shot back and clapped back with, honey's just too bitter because we didn't use any of his ideas for this. And, yeah.
That's disrespect.
Yeah, and it's funny to see because I remember when Disney purchased Lucasfilm, like, you know, years back. And then during that whole transition, there was this very kind of, like, sugary veneer of everybody, and especially Disney side, like, praising George Lucas and his vision and everybody while Lucas was trying to make sure he got his billions by saying, Disney, it's good in good hands. Like, I'm so excited to see where the franchise goes from here and excited to watch it as a fan. And now here we are.
But it makes sense why at the time he did that.
Yeah.
One, because how much was some stupid amount of money?
Yeah, stupid amount of billions that he was trying to get in his pocket.
But it also makes sense because, you know, when you read the Iger quote in the memoir, right, that he wrote about that, at the time, Lucas was under the mistaken impression that they would use his story.
Yeah.
Like, just all out authentic.
For just background, like, for Star Wars light people, like, Lucas always had a 9-film vision for Star Wars.
Yeah.
So he had a saga already planned out. He started in the middle, but he knew the prequels early on, and he knew the sequels, if only in, like, story sketch form. Yeah. So he always had this plan. Suffice to say, Disney has diverted from that plan.
And they bought those plans.
Yeah. Release the Lucas cut.
Because they bought the 3 scripts.
Yeah.
And then were like, but then Iger makes a very clear point numerous times in the thing of, like, you know, yes, he says, like, maybe we could have, like, handled the meetings themselves better. But he says numerous times in there that, like, we always told him, like, look, we might take ideas, but we are not, this is not a promise to make these movies. And then the meeting where they pitched it, not even pitched it, because they don't have to pitch it to him, but the meetings that they were like, here's what we're doing, with JJ in the room, and then he was evidently felt betrayed and mad after that, is surreal. Like, that's, that whole thing is crazy, but, you know.
I mean, it's George Lucas. It's the classic mistake of somebody giving up their creative baby to a big corporate overlord and thinking it's all going to work out and be wholesome for them, and only to find out corporate masters might have some different ideas.
I mean, he could wipe the tears away with the billions of dollars. Yeah. I don't really feel bad.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, it was also vision of
speaking
of
somebody
movies.
Who's been down this path and didn't get the billions, yeah, you're okay. You got the money. So,
and it was after he had already executed his vision unedited in the prequels, and we saw how those were received. There was a mixed reaction, you know.
But they had cool lightsaber fights.
They had cool, like, he even talks about some of the ideas that, like, he had for these, and you can look at it and go, I'm kind of glad they didn't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so,
kind of glad they.
But it was just funny. It's funny to see, you know, people who were just sleeping on billions of Star Wars money getting into these, like, little catty fights.
Yeah.
You didn't use my idea. F your idea. Like, I love it. Like, I feel like the whole country's just becoming, like, one big talk show. Like, we're all becoming the Maury Show. It's great. But, I mean, in the end, who cares what George Lucas thinks? Where this train has left the station, like, we're well past the George Lucas years. I'm sure you can make a bunch of fan videos saying if George had made the sequel trilogy, and those will keep you entertained for a while. So, keep you busy with that while we move on. Finally, last but not least, we got a new Star Wars attraction coming to the Star Wars Galaxy Edge area of the Disney theme parks. It's called Rise of the Resistance. We don't know much about it yet. They just announced it today. But, basically, it looks like you will be kind of a walkthrough. They say it's like a 3D or 360 immersive total experience of putting you in the position of a resistance fighter, helping to fight the First Order. And it looks like one of those kind of like crazy rides, almost like the Back to the Future ride. It used to be at Universal Studios or something. But that's just my early impression from the video that's on Good Morning America, in which you can find on comicbook.com Star Wars. But yeah, so Galaxy's Edge continues to expand. And before you know it, by 2023 or so, Disney's going to look a lot like Star Wars and Marvel all over the place. Which is going to be fun for me. I'll be going back to those parks then.
I was going to say, I've yet to make it to, like, you know, Galaxy's Edge and see a lot of the new stuff that has appeared over the last year, 2 years. So, like, I'm excited because, like, by the time I get there, this place will look awesome.
Yeah, I mean, by the time I get there, my kids will be, like, piping.
Galaxy's Edge is so cool.
Can't wait.
It is so cool. You walk in and, like, you're in Star Wars.
Yeah, man, it looks really, I mean, it
looks
really
cool. There's not, like, much
to do. I like how
they're
fitting in this resistance thing to the area that they built and how they're kind of putting the attractions into that world that they've built, and it's really cool. So yeah, I'm looking forward to going there, taking my kids, you know, losing a good amount of paychecks on that vacation. So all right, moving right along to the sort of Marvel universe, we'll call it the quasi Marvel universe. Sony has announced a new Spider-Man spin-off movie. And if you were hoping for, like, Venom, another kind of like Venom spin-off, or Black Cat or Silver Sable or even Cardiac, well, you're SOL in this case, because you're getting none of those. And instead, we're getting the movie we all knew was coming down the pike, Madam Web.
Hey!
Yeah. Hey-ho. Madam Web. Yeah. I mean, talk about random things Sony is pulling out.
I just feel like Sony's at the point where Warner Brothers was like 4 years ago, like at Comic-Con when they flashed every logo and every movie was in development and everybody had it like...
But I don't think so, because I think Sony's actually going to make these movies.
I don't know. I think
Morbius is already... what do you mean you don't know? Like, what don't you know? Morbius, is Venom 2 not getting made?
Where's Black Cat and Silver Sable?
Yeah, Black Cat and Silver Sable, that was part of the Amazing Spider-Man, like, era.
Yeah, that one's
a year ago, there was a report that they were developing that movie.
It was a carryover, and then that was the one that made it through. That was actually the one I was looking forward to
the most.
And it's
not completely gone, Silver and Black. That's not completely gone yet.
Did you really like that premise?
Yeah.
I feel...
That's one title.
Yeah.
It's not.
That's just the
PC.
One that came to mind. I'm pretty sure they've said there's more plans that I don't know if I'm going to see all of them.
Narrator, they did not. But... The point is, this is Madam Web. Who is Madam Web? Well, Madam Web is several people in the Marvel Universe, and I think it's important to note like what we could get here. One of them is the old lady Cassandra Web, who is an old lady who has a neuromuscular disease that basically kind of Stephen Hawking's her, and she has to be in a life support system that looks like a giant web, because that's convenient for everybody medically. But she has these intense psychic powers. She is telepathic. She has clairvoyance and she has precognition. So basically she can read minds, see situations far away from her, and see into the future.
I.e. she is the best plot device ever for a comic. That's why she's always in the middle of every event.
She's the seer, basically.
Yeah.
So it's hard to imagine, like when I was writing this up, it's hard to imagine a movie being constructed over an old woman who can see things. You know, you'd have to add to that. So what do you add to that? Well, there is one storyline with Madam Web that seems the most rich for a movie, which is that, Julia Carpenter, the second Spider-Woman, after a certain event, Madam Web is killed, the old one, and she passes her powers on to Julia Carpenter, who kind of sheds her Spider-Woman and arcane guises of a superhero and becomes the new Madam Web.
Yeah.
Now, that is something I could see as a spinoff. About somebody who is an old, experienced mystic, gets taken out, has to pass her powers on to this younger, completely inexperienced person who has to try to deal with the sudden knowledge that comes with these powers. Like, that is a premise for a movie. The thing that's weird about this, besides the
kind
of obscurity of Madam Web, is that in doing this, like, Sony is essentially taking the step to kind of put its own Spider-Man universe on its own feet, but they're risky, risky feet. Because Madam Web plugs into this whole mythos of Spider-Man that's been created, like, mostly, and really kind of delved into over the last 10 years or so, about the great web that exists between realities, the spider deity that created, the fact that every Spider-Man in spider-themed character is like an avatar for this deity and stuff. Like, once you get into all of that, like, you're making a Spider-Man universe. But as I said in the article, this sounds like something that would be much better suited for the Spider-Verse animated universe.
Yes.
Than a live action.
Because Spider-Verse did a very good job of cutting all that out and going, here's this interlinked universe, here's your Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
But in the comics...
And it made it like acceptable for a movie-going audience, which you think is very smart based on previous conversations we've had on the podcast.
Yeah, because they cut out a...
No, I mean, you think the movie-going audience is very smart.
I do think they are. I don't think the comics do a very good job
it's
convoluted as hell.
Yeah. Like, by this point, Spider-Verse did a great job of making it
in
one movie.
Because I'm not blaming a reader for not understanding a convoluted history of crap. The spider, like, there are parts of that I love, like Ezekiel and some of the totem stuff and Morlin. Like, there's some really interesting concepts in that web, no pun intended, of stories. But it's a mess. I mean, especially when you get the other involved and you throw a bunch of stuff in. I'm not expecting any comic or movie fan to understand that. I thought Spider-Verse went, okay, here's the cool part about that.
Yeah.
We're going to leave all this other stuff. We're just not going to acknowledge that happened.
It's just the multiverse. They're Spider-Man. They're connected because of their the same person in different realities. The,
done.
And that's it. Done. So like a Madame Web movie in the Spider-Verse animated like universe, I would be like, yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah. Like that's a person who has access and can see a bunch of stuff to a larger Spider-Verse. Pulling this off in live action is going to be interesting, to say the least. And now I will give BD, I will throw you to this. If there is one movie in Sony's lineup I would predict to possibly not make it, this would be that movie.
Well, narrator chiming back in from earlier, based on facts, according to your friends at Screen Rant, movies Sony promised, but I don't expect to see The Sinister Six, Night Watch, Black Cat, Silk, Venom 2, that one's happening. Silver Sable, I don't expect it. Jackpot, Kraven the Hunter, Morbius is happening, and maybe Spider-Man 3. So they've been trying to make a lot of movies, and we're seeing two of them.
Now, to be fair, like three of those.
Yeah, those are all for, like, a lot of those are from
in the Sinister Six era when they were, it was still like right around Amazing Spider-Man.
I think Silver and Black and Kraven,
I'm not saying you're wrong.
I'm just
saying, to be fair.
Yeah. Kraven the Hunter.
Right, my point was just that they've promised a lot of movies along the way, and the plans keep shifting. So I think just because they're shopping,
a lot of time looking that up. Was it a payoff? Everything you were hoping?
I was just waiting to get to it. But I think my point is that they have these ideas, and just because they're developing a movie doesn't mean we're going to see it. So Madame Web, maybe they just think it's an idea, and they're shopping around and trying to get people attached to see if the movie will work, and we may never see it if somebody's like, "Eh, this might not work yet, at least."
Yeah. So that's Brandon Davis answering my question, where I said I think he might be right, and in this movie might not make it. So.
I don't have a ton of faith in this, only because of the things we mentioned before. Yeah. Of like, this is very tricky. This is a weird character to build as a solo thing. I would feel better if they had announced another movie and they went, "Oh, Madame Web's going to be a part of it." Like, yeah, that opens some interesting opportunities. But as a solo, I don't have a ton of faith that this makes the jump. I think at some point it'll be like, "Hey, we'll spin it a different way." But we'll see. Maybe they'll prove me wrong.
I don't think they will. Moving right along.
This microphone.
Other strange news in comic book programming. We were so excited because Marvel TV was continuing to build with a Hulu universe that was going to be kind of a supernatural theme, darker theme, side of the Marvel universe, or the Marvel kind of cinematic or TV universe. Basically, we were getting a Ghost Rider series on Hulu with Gabriel Luna's Robbie Reyes and a Hellstrom TV series on Hulu. With the Hellstrom siblings. Well, one of those is dead, no pun intended, and it's Ghost Rider. The Ghost Rider series for Hulu has been canceled before it ever began. It seems like Gabriel Luna's future in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is kind of kaput. It looks like his Ghost Rider will just be an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. creation, and we'll move on to something else. Now, this has led, of course, it is sad for people like myself who really wanted to see this particular version of a Ghost Rider TV series, but there might be a silver lining here, which a lot of people instantly predicted as soon as they heard this news. Brandon Davis, would you like to tell people what the silver lining might be?
For the fact that Ghost Rider is probably drafted by the MCU?
That is correct. Lining? In your popular tweet, you said that this is probably a sign that Ghost Rider is drafted to the MCU, and it seems like there could be some merit to that. After all,
Moon Knight.
Yeah, we have Moon Knight coming up. We have Blade on the horizon. I mean, we have all the makings of a darker kind of supernatural themed corner of the Marvel Cinematic Universe proper taking shape. And it's not at all outside, and we don't know this for sure yet, but it's not outside the realm of possibility at all that, yeah, they decided, I want Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
And they're going to bring him back. I mean,
and also, I mean, I saw a lot of reactions that people were very upset about this. I enjoy Gabriel Luna in the part as well. I haven't watched all of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but what I did watch, I thought he was great. But they said at Comic-Con, they straight up said Doctor Strange and the Madness in the Multiverse of Madness is going to be scary. And then Kevin Feige was quickly like, and it's going to be rated PG-13, just so that people could stop that conversation before it started. But I mean, maybe they're going to start diving into actually dark content in proper MCU, because I know Netflix and Hulu have not. You could call them MCU, but I don't, because they're not really connected. We all know Marvel TV and Marvel Studios operate differently. The stories operate differently. They make nods to one. Well, TV makes nods to movies. Really, movies don't really make nods to TV anymore. But I think that maybe with Disney Plus and all, I mean, we're getting how many Marvel titles per year if you count movies and TV shows, they have to vary in tone. I think maybe they start making some actually dark stuff, especially on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And if Ghost Rider comes to the MCU in Disney Plus series or movie form, you have to, they're making Blade. There's no way Blade is going to be a feel good movie.
Yeah, they're making Blade. They're making Moon Knight. Moon Knight could be very like.
Yeah.
It's just weird to me that I did not expect this one to be the one that fell through. I expected Hellstrom.
Well, I mean, it seems like in the comics they've backed off the Robbie Reyes character and are going back towards like the 90s Dan Ketch, Johnny Blaze, that whole mythos. I mean,
he's an Avenger right now.
Who, Robbie Reyes?
Yeah.
I've kept up. All I've read.
I mean, the comics have dipped into like catches like part of a storyline right now. Some of the other Ghost Riders are, but they keep pushing him as like he's an Avenger, he is the Ghost Rider, and so that part is like it would make sense. He's the easiest to translate for me from a grounded material. Like the MCU likes to take like a grounded approach to characters. Robbie is the easiest to train.
I think if you're doing a movie, you don't have to pick and choose. I think they'll take on the whole thing.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, like, he's made for an MCU thing.
Ghost Rider movie.
But I think they'll take on the whole mythos and the demonic background to it all. Like, that'd be, no pun again, we're full of freaking puns today. It would be the perfect vehicle for, like, getting the demonic side into a more grounded, combining the grounded MCU in like a demonic thing. Like,
I think the dynamic between him and his brother and the family element there, it's just more, served right up on an MCU.
I mean, it was created in the time where knowledge of Marvel being mass media was there. And so like, I agree. And that's why I wanted to see it. But in the Latin culture stuff also, like I wanted to see.
I mean, it's like Sam Alexander all the time, right? Yeah. Like that was made for an MCU thing.
Yeah, if the character came out between like 2012 and 2016,
I'm
pretty sure they were just made for movies.
I do find it funny that they might have just killed Hellstrom in the comics, but as Hulu was like, that one's good to go, and then Blade stabs him in a book this week. But
Jeff must just wake up every morning and be like, "Is this character still there? Please."
Yeah, they do kind of seem on life support.
Yeah. All right. Well, when we come back, we are going to deep dive into our review of the new TV series Stumptown, and we are going to discuss Marvel's Powers of X number 5, so be sure to stay tuned for that.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
All right, so let's talk Stumptown. Stumptown was called one of the best new shows. It got some of the best critical reviews of the new season of shows, including comicbook.com going out and saying it's the best new show of the season.
Well, then you know it's true.
Yeah, I mean, from the proud people of all our reviews and assertions about TV shows, comics, and movies.
That's right.
But we all watched Stumptown, and just a quick overview. I mean, I know Matt really liked it because I watched him watch it in real time. And I actually really liked it. And I don't necessarily even like cop procedural shows. I'm so burned out on those and medical procedural shows. I kind of hate both of them. But I think what made Stumptown different for me is first and foremost the performance from Kobe Smulders, who is so good when you're kind of Robin Sparkles, when you take it back to the Robin Sparkles How I Met Your Mother. But she hasn't really gotten to like shine or be as personable in a lot of movie roles, certainly not as Maria Hill in the MCU.
So dry.
Very dry, drab character. But Stumptown really reminds you that Kobe Smulders has a lot of charisma, like, and she's pitch perfect as a very kind of troubled person who uses sarcasm and humor as a very effective cover for her deeper vulnerabilities and problems, and has some pretty funny action scenes in this. And the whole vibe of the show is just kind of offbeat in the right way. It feels, Stumptown is also, like, I mean, if you don't know, it's a nickname for Portland, Oregon, and it feels very Portland and Portlandia-ish in the way, and it's kind of hipster offbeatness, but laid up on top of a cop procedural's bones. And so there are a lot of funny things that you see in every show, but were uniquely kind of just distinct and funny here, like the opening sequence with her in a car chase thing with two guys. It all was good. And so I thought it was a really good pilot. And I'd be willing to tune in at least for, you know, the next few episodes just to see if it finds its rhythm. I would worry about it burning out if there isn't some kind of larger serialized. I never read the comic that it's based on, so I don't know. Yeah. But if there is not a larger serialized story to kind of pull you into some kind of intrigue than what we got in the pilot. But yeah, good entertaining show, good entertaining pilot. And Kobe Smulders, it looks like she has found a good place to be.
Yeah, it has a, you know, I saw this a lot on Twitter, like, you know, people comparing it to Jessica Jones in a big way. But, like, I mean, that's a compliment. Jessica Jones is fantastic, especially, like, the first two seasons.
Yeah.
I think the first two seasons are really strong. The third one, I agree, like, that one kind of went off the rails. But the first two I felt were really good. But one of the things I always had Jessica Jones, like, is so, and it's just the portrayal of the character is, it's like so in your face with like her personality is, there's no like, there's not a lot of spots to breathe for the character. Like the character doesn't break that up. It's like when Jessica Jones is on screen, like her personality is right here all the time. It doesn't really go down or up. And that's great because you have a supporting cast that can balance that out. Here, you know, Smulders is there's a lot of rounded edges to that character. So like, even when she goes into some dark places or like has some memories about things in the past or deals with even some like heavy subjects, she has enough just natural charisma and like breaks in humor or a sarcastic comment at the right time that just takes a little bit of that edge off and lets that character breathe.
Like, yeah, almost like just spots of humor in how like she's a little bit silly.
Yeah.
Like, but like still like, and capable.
Exactly. Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes in the show is like she's trying to get information from the phone from a girl, and she's like asking her to contact something. And the girl like completely shuts her down, being a hard ass, like, "You're not a cop, I'm not helping you," whatever. So she leaves and drives off. And so then as soon as she's gone, the girl like whips out her phone and tries to contact the person she's looking for. And she comes like running out from the back of the house where she's like obviously spun around the block and come running out of the car and just grabs the phone out of the girl's hand. And it's just there you go.
I just
like,
love the blatantness of it too, because she doesn't even try and be quiet. Like she's just booking it, like just hoping that the person doesn't. Like,
and then she steals the car later in the episode.
Yes, yeah, that's great.
Kobe Smulders like really sells these moments, like when she comes just running out, grabbing the phone, like, aha! Like,
and it has a like there's a vintage like Rockford vibe to this show, like the stuff in between. You know, the characters are, you know, yes, you go in the sequences and you're like, okay, I'm gonna meet the best friend or I'm gonna meet the, you know, the family part. But there's always like a little like it's done very organically. It those interactions feel just the right, like it never goes into like sap or formulaic territory. There's always just a little something different. I hope for Michael Ealy that this is like a big
friend, because
I love him in everything, and he's always in the show that dies like six episodes, and I hope this is it, because he's great and they have great chemistry so far. So I was happy
to see Nick Miller on TV again.
Yeah, Jake Johnson. I mean, he holds down a lot of the most important parts because he has like the kind of ability to bring like wit and humor to heavy parts, and so like this episode does have heavy parts when it's dealing with Kobe Smulders' character's kind of. Her name's Dex, and her PTSD because she served in the military in the Afghan war and what that's all about, and him kind of keeping it real and keeping it grounded with her as her friend is very good, and they do a good job of creating chemistry without the will they won't they romantic stuff, which is blessedly gone, except for one thing when he sees Michael Ealy in the beginning and there's like this little man on man kind of like, but other than that, like, he walks the line of being like a good, almost like brotherly mentor or confidant to her. And he keeps it funny while keeping it serious.
And the stuff with her brother, I thought was really good. Like there was, yeah, I really enjoyed this.
I even like the bit part. It's like the two crooks arguing about the coffee in the car, like such a Portland type ding.
And the cassette tape gag that runs throughout. Like,
yeah, her car's broken and her radio starts randomly and starts playing this cassette.
And like, those songs all just for whatever reason tie into the moment. Like I thought, okay, that's going to be a running gag.
Ironic tone for the.
Yeah, it's great. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So Stumptown. Yeah, pretty good. Score one for comic book adaptations. Pretty good.
It made me want to go. I never read the book either, and it made me actually want to go back and like read the book now because
Greg Rucka.
Yeah.
So all right. So we got that's good. We're off to an okay start with this TV season. We've done some things for American Horror Story, Stumptown. Hopefully, it stays this good. You know. Yeah. Also, South Park came back last night and was also hilarious with Mexican Joker. Man, oof. We did a thing about that. It's up on the site now. But let's move on from TV to comics. Marvel's Powers of X number 5 hit stands. And we're coming to the end of this. It feels like just yesterday that we started this whole Jonathan Hickman X-Men reinvention event. But now we only got one issue left of each book, House of X and Powers of X. That's
makes
it.
Me sad.
It makes me sad, too. But then, I mean, to be fair, then we have a whole lot to do because we have a bunch of new X-Men.
Seven or six
new X-Men books coming that will be reading for the next year, but while it's all contained right now, Powers of X, and I'm going to be out here and say, like, Powers of X has it started out as my favorite book of the two, but it's quickly slid into the back of the pack. I love House of X both for the artwork, and just the more focused storyline it tells. But Powers of X, as you know by now, functions to kind of reframe the events of House of X after each issue of House of X to give you an expanded view of why all these events are relevant, how they came about, and suggestions of where they could be going in the future. So after House of X 5 showed us how the X-Men have invented this resurrection process, established Krakoa as a sovereign world, mm-hmm. like nation, invite all the mutants, including the good, the bad, and everybody in between to come live there, all those game-changing events, we get to see the background of how Xavier pulled this off with Magneto and other people in Powers of X-5, which is a lot of what this book is concerned with. Basically, how he used Emma Frost and the Hellfire Club to basically kind of leverage the flowers Krakoa produces for and the drugs made from it as leverage against the human population to give Krakoa their sovereignty as an independent mutant nation. All those geopolitics we get to see. We get to learn how Cerebro can copy a mutant mind and how Charles Xavier came up with this whole crazy process with Forge way back in the day. Forge gets to make an appearance. 70s Forge.
If a character could like speak from the book and go, thank you, you know Forge is like would just like send a personal gift basket.
I've been down here in limbo too long.
No one knows how to use me. And you finally come along and like same thing for Cypher and like Gold Balls. Like all these characters just like would adore, I imagine, Hickman just come out. Because, yeah, Forge has a great...
You got to imagine, Forge is like Hickman's wet dream, though. It's like a...
Oh, yeah.
A biological guy with unlimited knowledge of how to, you know, literally forge technology. That's like Hickman's hero there.
And the knowing, like, little... I love the stuff between Xavier and Forge, not only just for what Forge ends up doing, but also just, like, framing McCoy.
Yeah.
And like,
Beast,
you know...
And the difference between Beast and Forge and their levels of intellect and stuff. And then,
it's great.
Yeah, it was great. So then we get all that background, and it is all interesting background about, and we get to see Xavier putting out the telepathic call to all the mutants and the villains and saying, come live on Krakoa when we establish this thing, and them kind of considering it. And we get one great scene with Marvel's original mutant because he makes sure to ask all the mutants, and so he went and appears telepathically to Namor, and Namor shuts him down in like one of my favorite scenes of this series. I love the little aside scenes are just so good in this series. Where they just kind of visit, and we have these little, like, more traditional comic book scenes with just random characters like Sabretooth in a courtroom on trial, or Xavier meeting with Namor under the sea to kind of discuss him coming to Krakoa. And Namor's too arrogant, and he kind of breaks Xavier down, which is the best and kind of most telling thing, which he suggests that, like, Charles Xavier's full of bullshit, and all this kind of benevolent, come to Krakoa, let's all be one people stuff is kind of a smokescreen, Namor suggests. And he kind of suggests that he's probably the one person smart enough to see through it. not because he has a high intellect, but because he's always been arrogant enough to never believe in human racism towards mutants, that they're lesser than humans or stuff. He's like, what do I look like? The guy who's had trouble, like, having confidence? Yeah. Like, get out of here. He's like, and he says, get out of here, little man, and come back when you actually believe
it. So what is the end game for these books?
Like, ooh, what? We don't know yet, what? But...
Like, what do you mean by end game? Like what
where
are they
can
seeking?
It go? Where do you think it can go?
Well, this
go?
Is, I mean, the only destination is to set up a beginning, really. So,
right.
Like, it doesn't actually have to go anywhere. It just has to...
Like just like
a
new story. It's like a reboot for the X-Men, but not a reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hickman has been essentially going through and finding just about every unfinished, undeveloped idea.
Or just stupid idea.
Yeah. Like, or ones
it's basically like DC's Rebirth was.
Yes.
DC's Rebirth was taking all of the past mythos, putting it through like a strainer and saying, here's all the crap. We're going to strain out all the good stuff. And when we get it out, it's going to be a much tighter, like, little fiber log here.
And he's done that.
And that's what he's done with X-Men. Like, he's just taken everything, like, all the weird deaths, all the dangling storylines, all the continuity mistakes, and he's figured out a way to, say, either explain them or rearrange them into something more exciting for the future. And so, like, so the next two books are basically House of X will just be establishing the new setup of Krakoa. Here's Krakoa. It's an independent mutant nation, and all the mutants are now living here, but it's not as simple as it looks.
Yeah.
Things are going to, they're going to still be challenges, problems, things in the kind of geopolitics of it, I'm sure, and just within the mutant community itself. So that'll be House of X. And then Powers of X, I suspect the last book, will show us a larger framing that ends in a cliffhanger that shows us, oh, there's more to this story that the X-Men books are going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
Some big threat, some big mission, some big cliff, you know, big reveal we'll get at the end.
Who can be a villain in the stories going forward?
Xavier.
You think they're going to flip it that way?
I mean, it's hard to say because, well, there's so many villains already established. Right now, we have threats from the demon world that are lurking in the wings. There's a whole thing that we could get Inferno Part 2, like with the return of the Goblin Queen. There's a threat we haven't even talked about, but there's a whole storyline in the future with the Phalanx consuming now, you know.
The entire, we got two, like we, our plan worked.
Yeah.
And it worked too well.
So in the future, they were trying to find a way to convert themselves from biological entities into
machines,
you know, because they've, come as far as they can with technology. So they want to become, merge bio and technological in the form of the Phalanx. And they thought they could somehow kind of cheat their way into, like, joining the Phalanx but retaining sentience or something.
Yeah.
Phalanx is like, no. They're like, oh, by the way, we will let you join us. You made it. But what we didn't tell you is we're Brainiac, basically.
Yeah, we are like, going to absorb your entire planet and...
We want the knowledge.
Yeah.
And then we just destroy everything else.
Yeah.
And so now that's a big threat facing the future. And what this all means, we have to see because there are still so many questions that we don't have revealed. I made a list of 10 things, and I think we've only gone through like 6 of them. There are 4 big ones like still lurking out there, like, where's Moira during House of X?
Yeah.
What the hell happened during her 6th timeline? When is this timeline in the future happening, and why are they trying to do this thing with the Phalanx, and what's it going to mean for the present day? Like, all of these things are still unclear, but there are definitely things that could be set up as the conflict for the X-Men books to come.
And you talk about a villain. I mean, I think one of the biggest villains that comes out of this most likely is Sinister, because Sinister Hickman has laid that foundation numerous times of he's the one that is like has the greater idea of what's happening and has been actively plotting
and playing everybody who thinks they're playing.
Yeah. Right? And so I think that, like, I mean, coming out of here, I think he will be one of the biggest cards in that area. I also think just as we go on, because when we come out of here, the mutant kind will be the dominant species. And I think you're still going to, while they're all united under a yes, we're all mutants type of thing, you're still going to have your different like ideologies of like, what is the best way.
So like Apocalypse is just like, we're chill now?
No, I mean, there's a whole council that's come out of Krakoa, and, you know, there are some hints that we've seen
that's not
who the
last.
Council is, and there's going to be lots of different fights.
Yeah,
yeah.
Fights, betrayals, secret missions, things the X-Men have done for years.
And I think we're going to see a lot more political leanings in that case. Like, it's going to be more like, you know, something in the Senate or something in that, you know, the House of Representatives, right, of this vying for control, who feels like they have the best intent and who has the best idea for how this state should run. I think we're going to see a lot more of that stuff other than the, oh, hey, Juggernaut's running down a, trying to rob a bank.
Basically, Marvel's going to try to figure out the 2020 election before the Democratic Party can, you know. Yeah. And so that's what we're working against. And, you know, meanwhile, we'll have our Trump-style Orcus out there.
This book got me super excited for, I mean, one, I'm a giant Emma Frost fan. So that whole thing of, like, bringing her in, what she wants, her role in this, super interesting to me. And, like, Hickman just gets her, right? Like, him and Scott Summers, too. But it made me so excited for Marauders, because that is what, like, Marauders is just going to be really about.
The Hellfire Club.
Yeah. Kitty Pryde being a part of the Hellfire Club, because they've been teasing, like, this red thing, right? Like, a puzzle piece on there, and it's red, and it's her with Lockheed. Like, that, her and Emma have always bashed, because they've always had different ideas. And then once you throw Sebastian Shaw in there, and all the stuff of, like, how they maintain Krakoa.
Because them teaching school, trying to teach school together used to be hilarious.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Shadowcat, Emma Frost. That has shot, because of this issue, primarily, that has shot to, like, one
of that's going
to
be really intriguing, like, what Sebastian Shaw's plotting, like all three of them plotting, again, like working together but plotting against each other is going to be great. Just the Kitty Pryde pairing with Emma Frost is going to be great. The Emma Frost history with Sebastian Shaw is going to be great. Yeah.
There's so many cool
and lines. I feel like they're going to do a cool reinvention of Sebastian Shaw. That's going to be cool. In the future, I'm excited to see, because Orcus is still around. Mm-hmm. Mother Mold is still a threat. Just because they knocked it out once doesn't mean it's never going to be built. Exactly. In fact, the book says it will be built. You just hope it's built under better circumstances or different circumstances. So, yeah, the threat of Orcus, Nimrod, Mother Mold, all the Sentinels, all that stuff is still on the table. There's still a possible war in the future that we could see. Sinister and the breeding experiments. We might still see Chimera, things like that. All of that could be there. And if Sinister had any kind of knowledge brought to him about what he did on Mars in the future, in that timeline, like, then I would love to see characters like Rasputin, you know, emerge in present day.
Yeah.
Like, as these chimeras that they've been developing. So, from the covers we've seen as solicits, there's a lot of exciting things coming down the pike. Stuff that just has us already scratching our heads like, what? Like, and so I think this is going to be a good relaunch, and I, like we said before, I think this will go down as one of the milestone X-Men storylines, just for what they've done. So, yeah, man, we're coming to the end. If you guys, I mean, if you're still listening to this right now and you haven't read these things, go out and start getting these books.
Oh, absolutely. Question, just a quick question because I'm curious. Better than New X-Men or no? Like, do you need to see it stick the landing first?
Yeah, let me see it stick the landing. Don't let me talk too much.
They can always Game of Thrones it.
Like, right now,
because New X-Men, I mean, got really crazy. I mean,
yeah,
like, I have that hard back volume of New X-Men and the Battle of Cassandra Nova. New X-Men was just so weird.
Yeah.
And it was, like, refreshing because it was weird.
And Morrison's done that with, like, Green Lantern.
But, like, all the things with, like, Beak and that whole class, no girl, and the fart guy or the gas guy. Yeah. Like, all of that stuff was quirky, fun. But it was like us in the 21st century started trying to be futuristic and quirky and cool for future's sake.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just X-Men. New X-Men's guilty of that. It's everything in culture.
Yeah.
But this is actually, like, more of a just independently good creative story, not like shaped by the times, not like let's take the X-Men out of costumes and put them all in leather jackets and stuff, like in these new weird
like
costumes.
Unless, like, the ending just
completely
whiffs,
like, just S this is bed.
This is like a this surpasses that for me, like, you know, just in a sheer,
I mean,
like, for the same reasons, because I just like it as a story on its own. It's a great story. And then when you factor in all the things it does for them and going forward and all the things it lays out, it's not even
a quote. A much better setup than New X-Men left us with. And Morrison just likes to kind of shake things up for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Hickman, I think, is a more focused, planned shakeup. And I mean, this is my favorite kind of X-Men crossover, alt universe. Even though it's technically not alt-universe, you know what I mean, with the lives of Moira and all that stuff, the timelines, since Age of Apocalypse, probably.
Age of Apocalypse is still my favorite.
Yeah, still my favorite by far.
But this is right
Legion
up
Quest
there.
And Legion Quest and Age of Apocalypse are my two favorite X-Men, taking them all as one is my favorite X-Men crossover storyline of all time. But this is a good second. All right.
Yeah.
So that'll do it. We want to thank you guys for joining us on this episode of Comic Book Nation. If you are new to the show, we post new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com, where you can subscribe to our RSS feed to get regular updates about the show, or you can subscribe on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists, or tell any Amazon Alexa device to fire up Comic Book Nation podcast, and it will start playing for you. If you want to continue the discussion with us about anything we talked about, or just, you know, holler at us, hit us up at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can find us individually. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
And you can find me at Brandon Davis BD.
It's good to have you back, buddy.
Much love. Peace and blessings.